afford to put on a three-piece in a bar now. The most you can afford in a bar is maybe a one guy and an acoustic guitar. And then you move from that to one guy and a couple of record decks. And then you move from that to a machine which plays music on a big screen TV and karaoke. So that's what's putting an end to it. Yeah, I mean, it's great to see comedy nights coming back. And I know that some bars are trying to do that. But there just isn't enough good comedians around Northern Ireland to keep a circuit going. You need a circuit of, right? I mean, if you were listening to the same comedian every night in your local, every weekend in your local pub, he'd soon run out of jokes and you'd soon get bored listening to him. And let's face it, there only are so many Neil Delamere's and Jake O'Kane's. Not that he's funny in the slightest. But I don't mind you let anybody hear that. That's not an opinion I own very dearly. So yeah, there just isn't enough talent in our wee country, as they say, to have a live comedy club circuit going.
Sorry, I apologise, Nigel. I briefly cut out about literally a sentence, but I missed who was in Toe Jam.
Jerry Anderson. You know, Jerry Anderson, the radio Ulster.
That's right, the radio.
He played in many bands, but latterly he played in a little three-piece rock band, and they were very rocky. I mean, the drummer would go to very elaborate drum solos. I saw them a number of times. They were quite good. Jerry played, I think he played bass, didn't he, in that band? Well, he certainly played one of the guitar instruments. And he was a young, cool Jerry with his Converse shoes and jeans and velvet jacket, as I remember. Yeah, he did look cool. Jerry was cool.
Well, that's an interesting one that you talk about, the little three-piece bands. Of course, famously, Taste began their life in pubs in Belfast, and there was I think it was called the Sailor's Hotel, I could be wrong, or the Maritime Hotel, that was it, my apologies, near the Docklands, and that's where they actually cut their teeth before recording albums and going to the Isle of Wight, and I'd be a particular fan of them. You also had Van Morrison, who began there, and there were also lots of different small bands that did circuits in Belfast and across the north, and as you say, the jukebox and the karaoke machine killed that off. Very briefly, you maybe don't have any memories at all, but I'm so thrilled that someone remembers Marjorie Ray, because she had this huge body of work in clubs and pubs and has been forgotten, unfortunately. And we talked earlier about women and the fact that social attitudes have changed and that pubs don't always follow that. And
closing again there, Michael.
Oh, sorry.
You're back now.
Apologies. We talked a little bit about...
You're back.
No problem. Marjorie Ray and the history of pubs, and actually Marjorie had to perform on the stage in pubs in Belfast and then go out the back door because she wasn't allowed to be served at the pub, at a public bar with the rest of the performers. So that shows you how much times have changed. And as we said earlier, you had the Maritime Hotel, you had all that social context. What can you remember of Marjorie Ray and other performers from that period before the jukebox?
I can actually remember seeing Marjorie Ray perform one time in a bar, upstairs in a bar, in a lounge area of a bar called Montgomery's in Ballymena. And it was an unusual night. The publican, the owner of the bar, was a guy called John McEwen. John knew Marjorie Ray from some socially, I don't know. And John put this idea together that he wanted to put an old-fashioned music hall evening. And he got together a number of performers. Couldn't remember if I had time, I can maybe think about them again. But one of them was Marjorie Ray, and she came dressed in a white, flouncy Victoria night outfit and an umbrella. And she performed all these songs, very sort of music hall type thing, you know. It was quite an entertaining night, but it didn't fit into any sort of current trend, you know. I mean, it wasn't very much of the zeitgeist. But yeah, she was a comedy singer, I would have described her. That was the way I thought of her. Lovely lady, and she performed, and she spoke to practically everybody in the audience and had time for them.
That's fascinating. I hadn't realised the good old days was in Ballymena, you know, the old Leonard Sachs thing, but...
John McCall was trying to recreate that sort of thing. On your talking about the Van Morrison and all that sort of thing, a little story that I did hear, there was a time when Cream, the band Cream, which featured Eric Clapton, Ginger Baker, and somebody, Bruce,
Jack Bruce, yes.
Jack Bruce, they had been playing in Belfast. I should know the name of the bar. They'd been playing a gig in the 60s, right about 63, 62, 63. And anyway, they've been playing in Belfast, and was it Romano's movie in Belfast? And then their next gig the next night, or the night after, 2 nights hence, was going to be in Port Stewart in the one of the hotels up there, I think it was. But anyway, the story goes that on their way from going from Belfast to Port Stewart, they stopped off to spend the night with a few friends in Ballymena, in a little street called Cahill Street, where they decamped from their van into a little house, which was a bit of one of those sort of like almost like a we'd call that student house, and they met up with a young guy called Rory Gallagher. Spent the night playing and jamming together, while famously Eric Clapton spent the night in the van, so drunk they didn't know where he was, and they left him there. Anyhow, the story goes, now we know this story. The night went on, so Gallagher jammed, Rory Gallagher jammed with Bruce, Jack Bruce, and Ginger Baker. In the morning, Eric Clapton woke up, didn't know where he was, hadn't a clue where he was, but there were some kids playing in the street, and he bribed the kids in the street with cigarettes to find out what house he should be in. There's a guy in Ballymena who now plays in a band. I won't name him because you can find out who he is. But he still owns the cigarette that Eric Clapton gave him, and he has it framed in a little wooden frame. But he plays in a band now. So that we can always say that Eric Clapton never played Ballymena, but he did spend the night in it, but he never played it.
But no, I love the idea of taste and cream coming together in a student doss house in Ballymena. What a story! But
Cahill Street,
I suppose another theme that I'm very interested in is the Troubles, Nigel. And I mean, there's a great report on Nationwide from March 1972 with Sue Lawley, who was the presenter then. She went on to do Desert Island Discs and lots of other stuff. But she was experiencing a day in the life of a Belfast housewife and the risks involved in going out to public places across the province. So it wasn't just Belfast, but she wanted to get a look at the ongoing violence of the Troubles. And the camera goes into Lavery's Bar in East Belfast, and the landlord is dismayed and says that he's lost lots of passing trade during the day. And he stresses that the interior of the bar had been badly damaged as a result of violence several nights before, and he installed shutters to protect the stained glass windows. So I was wondering how the Troubles affected your social life in pubs, and can you remember any of the kind of precautionary customs that were taken by pub owners during the Troubles that now have become a thing of the past? I mean, as you say, children now hardly comment on whether you're Catholic or Protestant. So we've lost to history, haven't we, the tales of pub owners who had to put up shutters and take different precautions. So what are your memories and experiences of the Troubles as a pub goer?
I can remember as a young man starting when I was starting out to go to pubs, being told by my elders, "Oh, you can't go to that pub. You can't go to that pub." Asking why and being told, "Because that's because you're not one of them. That's one of them's pubs. You're not that sort. So you don't go there." So you knew where you could go, and that you sort of stuck to that. Also, I can remember the horrible thing about going out in the 70s was your journey home. Okay, if you were lucky, one of your friends was driving, but you were pretty damn certain that on your way home you would be stopped by a patrol, the army or RUC or whatever. And those were always difficult evenings, those being stopped. I mean, you could be, I remember myself many occasions being taken outside the car and told to wait and stand while the rain pelted down, and all I had was a shirt on me. Well, a shirt and a pair of trousers, obviously, but I'm standing in my shirt getting soaked and being told to wait there. I also famously, and this is a strange story that's been told, my father has a very unusual name. My name's Flynn. My father's name is Earl Flynn. And one night, my father was coming home from the pub in a car, and he stopped and asked his name. And he told Earl Flynn. The soldier didn't believe him, and then went round to the passenger side and asked my father's friend, their co-driver, what his name was, whereupon the gentleman was the guy, he was a friend of my father's, who's called 201 Power. So this soldier just did not believe this whatsoever, whereupon the two boys were told to wait in the car for quite a long time until they decided to tell the truth. But they already were talking to him. So Tyrone Power and Earl Flynn were not allowed through that checkpoint that night. Now, going back to someone else, that story was told by Gerry Anderson on his radio station, because my mother rang and I told him at one time. But yeah, I mean, my memories of the troubles in the pubs was it just defined where you went, and it was difficult how you got home.
That's a brilliant story. I think that's exactly the kind of humour I think that you get in pubs. And obviously it's a true story, it just was terrible coincidence, but that's a brilliant troubles anecdote. But I mean, what kind of, you know, you're talking about checkpoints, you're talking about the fact that coming home was difficult, but what kind of precautions did pub owners take? So looking at some of the old archive stuff, you know, they talked about shutters, the fact that they couldn't open during the day for that lucrative lunchtime trade because of army patrols and the threat of violence. So what sort of precautions did pubs in Ballymena take?
I can remember back to times, shops, the ones that, I think it always tickled me, but shops, clothes shops, particularly the pockets in clothes shops were always stitched up.
Oh, right, yes.
If you were in a shop, you couldn't put anything into it. You couldn't put your hand in their pocket or put anything into a pocket. Equally, nowadays, I'd be sitting in a pub and someone will sit down a bag beside me and say, would you keep an eye on that for me when I go and have a smoke or something? And I say, no bother. So this stranger places a large, heavy bag in front of me and I protect it. Whereas you think back to the 70s, the whole idea of someone setting something down on a pub floor never would have happened. You just wouldn't leave anything in a pub and you wouldn't be allowed to leave anything in a pub. I don't ever remember anybody checking me at the door for what I was or who I was, although I do remember an incident in the bar in Lisburn Road once upon a time, which was very unfortunate, but I'll not repeat it because it's likely libelous. But bars were security conscious more than sectarian. That's what a bar's job was. It's to look after people, their customers' security. I mean, we had some horrible incidents in the past. I mean, if you ever see the photographs of the inside of the Dropping Well pub, those are horrific. Some of the worst pictures of the troubles, I think, were the pictures taken in the aftermath of pub shootings.
Attacking people whenever their guards let down, they're trying to enjoy themselves, and you're totally right, you know, very traumatic. I suppose, as well as the troubles, the other thing that I wanted to touch on was sporting culture, and you mentioned it earlier a little, but I was interested not only in terms of, so you talked about the fact that some pubs were football pubs or boxing pubs, and they had their own identities, and perhaps had their own pub sports teams. So I'm interested not only in watching sports in pubs, but also that old culture. Like, I mean, my local pub is very small, and there's pictures at the back of it with the snooker team, the darts team. I don't think there was a football team. I think a lot of them have big beer bellies, you know, and in the past they constricted themselves to board games and snooker and stuff. But you know, thinking about Ballymena pubs in the past and pubs you've been in, what kind of pub sports teams were prevalent in the past that we've maybe lost now to a certain extent?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it used to be the local paper, the local weekly paper. In the back pages, there was always the darts team, the darts competition, the darts league, the pool league, and the snooker league. There's none of that now. None of that. Absolutely. You know, darts, when was the last time you saw a dartboard in a pub? Only in a sitcom on the BBC in a British pub, but you don't see a dartboard